Okay, I think it's exactly 8:10, huh? We can prepare for puja. Suyan Nim Tu, to help light the candle and the incense. Yeah. Silun, yeah. Next Monday is going to fly out already. Then one more. Yeah. There, this new one. What's her name? Stephanie, yeah. Light the candle. Yeah. Oh, you light before. Oh, you came before. Then somebody else. Give Ng Bi lah. Today is a big day. Sahadev. The rest of us can stand. Come in. Yeah, join us. Yeah, we just about to start the puja. Yeah. Sadhu. Silence. Pass to the back. Sadhu. Yeah. Let us develop the spiritual faculty of Sada, Virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you can be seated. Then we will turn to page 1 of the chanting book. We will chant the Vandana onward. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Sambuddhassa Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dityampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dityampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dityampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now you are chanting Padipa Puja, offering of light. Ganna sarappa ditena dipena tamadangsina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang. Ganda sambarayutena dopena hang sugang hina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bhajana muttamang. Vanna ganda guno petang etang kasuma santatin pujayami munindasa siri pada sarorohe. Pujemi buddhang kasumena nena punnena mtena cha hotu mokhang. Pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tatayati vinasabhavang. Adivase tuno bante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatumutamang. adivase tu no bante pale parika pitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tu no bante bojanang parika pitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang. Let us make the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses out the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthens our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the born free nibbana. Making of oral aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Jhampa. Buddhang Pujemi. Dhammang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay, you all can be seated. Then we can have our meditation session. We will have half an hour. Oh, somebody new. Oh, what's your name? Yeah. Sok Yen. Most welcome. You can join us. You meditate before? Oh, good. What type of meditation are you familiar? Oh, very good. You do the chanting? Nian for how? Yeah. Ah, okay. I know. They call it Kong An or what. Very good. So at least with that, you can develop your own cultivation. Okay. Maybe tonight I will make full use of this session to help the new people develop better understanding, since the talk is recorded, so people can develop clarity of the Dhamma and understanding if they listen to the recording attentively. So if you see what we do in our pre-puja, it may be slightly different from Mahayana tradition, but don't worry. essentially is the same. It's how you approach it. When you understand, it is the same. So the word Theravada, Mahayana, or Vajrayana are just a division that the Buddhist community evolved over the years because of certain condition at that time. The Theravada was the tradition of the elders. That's why the word Thera is there. Thera are monks that has more than 20 years of renunciation, or they have been in this monkhood for more than 20 years. They are called Thera. Then Mahayana, like the word Maha, is the bigger vehicle. Yana is vehicle. Mahayana is supposed to be the more liberal type, the more widely accepted type of Buddhism. But the Theravada tradition, the tradition of the elders, or initially it was called the Orthodox tradition, they are more rigid. But they have their reason for it, which is very good. They want to preserve the original teaching. And during the early days, during the Buddha's time, there was no writing. There was no printing of book too. So everything is transmitted through oral chanting. That's why Theravada preserved a lot of the original Pali chanting, which were very accurate and very authentic. But the problem is the meaning, the understanding of it, that one, along the way, it has developed some problems and issues. Whereas Mahayana, they develop it further, much, much further. But the problem with Mahayana is sometimes because it is developed to such a stage, you overdevelop it. Then it becomes too liberal. Then you got some slight deviation in the teaching. Some of it can deviate by quite a bit. But the authentic teaching that is preserved in the Theravada tradition through the Pali chanting, if you compare them, then you will trace back to the origin how this teaching come about. But when it comes to understanding of the teaching, you cannot deny the Mahayana understand it much deeper. So every tradition has their pros and cons. So we have to develop only this understanding, then there is no argument. But essentially both traditions, or even all the three traditions, they have a common teaching, which is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. All of them agree to the fundamental truth, and the rest of the teaching, they are spin off from this fundamental truth. It's how you understand it and develop it that will make the difference. So in our puja, our tradition is we pay respect to Triple Gem, then we chant the salutation to the Buddha. Then what we did is also we offer special puja offering that reminds us of the teaching. That's why you follow the chanting, the English version. You will start to understand all those key things. Then when we start, the puja is to develop the faith in us. The spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya are very important. These are the five spiritual faculties, as opposed to the five mental hindrances. You look at the two pieces of white plastic notes at the end of the whiteboard. These are the two categories of Dhamma. The Buddha mentioned it very clearly in the teaching. If you want to understand his spiritual teaching, you must have the five spiritual faculties, which is the top chart. And these are the five spiritual faculties that you have to develop: faith or saddha or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. That one is very, very important. You must have strong faith in the Buddha and his teaching through understanding him. not blind faith, through understanding how special a being he is. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. And he has great wisdom and virtue. You can say, at the time when he arrives, he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. That's why he got this nine great virtue. He is the teacher of man and God. He can teach any being to develop the wisdom for awakening. Yeah. Then he is worthy of respect, offering. Yeah. And he is the knower of the world, omniscient and all those things. And this nine great virtue make him very different, and because of that, he has this complete wisdom and perfection that enable him to come out with this famous teaching, the Four Noble Truths, truth that can make you noble one, so enlightened one. And this Four Noble Truths, they can liberate living beings' mind and bring about enlightenment in the here and the now, so that there is no more suffering, no more misery, no more mental agony. There is only peacefulness. There is only awareness, the mindfulness, leading to all the clarity to understand all of the essential teaching, the Dhamma, profoundly. And because of that, the mind is very cool, serene, peaceful, calm, full of loving kindness, compassion, virtue, and understanding. And such a mind is beautiful. It's a blessing to all of humanity and mankind. That's why we are here, to develop the meditation, to develop this understanding leading to the awakening, so that you too can become beautiful. Yeah. Then when we make offering, we do it mindfully. Mindfulness is also another spiritual faculty. And when we have the faith through understanding who the Buddha is and how wonderful his teaching is, it was trigger off the second spiritual faculty, which is virya, or spiritual zeal, the spiritual tenacity to walk this way, where we see the beauty of his teaching, the importance of his teaching, the importance of learning this understanding, so that you can free your mind, you can be free of all suffering, and you can understand life beautifully, and you can live life beautifully too. Then you can get to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. You can live life to the fullest, with clarity, with understanding, with love, with compassion, and with all the great mind state of virtue. Then we rejoice with all the wholesomeness, the generosity of Kanyamita, who brought puja offering. And all these puja offerings, they are very meaningful. Then through this rejoicing, we develop more wholesomeness. It's a meritorious action. Then it brings about a lot of joy in our heart. That's why we say sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then as we mindfully offer, we rejoice. Our mind states are beautiful. You get to cultivate not only sadha virya, but siddhi. As you receive the offering, you hold it mindfully, then you rejoice and you offer. Then you pass it on mindfully. Then you develop the mindfulness to be observant, to see all the flow and the movement, the physical, mental, and nature's flow, and all this will help build up the spiritual faculties. Then as your mindfulness stabilizes, it will become samadhi. Samadhi is a very calm state of mind, but it is a free mind. It's not a conditioned state. A free mind that is collected and unwavering, that is samadhi. And it can only happen when you are in sati, mindfulness, in a relaxed state of awareness. Then when there is sati and mindfulness leading to samadhi, sati and samadhi will allow you to see things as they are clearly and awaken to the truth, to the nature's universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self, the three universal characteristics. So this clarity of mind, born of a collected and unwavering mind, is very important in meditation. This is the silent mind that can understand, that can be aware of all the arising and passing away of the mental aggregates of our form and mind. That how you become what you are, how through ignorance and delusion you are conditioned into various mind states that condition you to stir and react to sense experience. That's how the mental hindrance come. So without this awareness or mindfulness and understanding, you cannot develop wisdom. So the last spiritual faculty of Panya can only arise when your sati stabilize and develop samadhi. So sati and samadhi, mindfulness and collectedness of mind, will allow you to see things as they are and awaken to the truth. Jnana dasana, direct knowledge and vision of the reality or the truth. So as you see things as they are, according to reality, not according to what your brain tell you, what your mental conditioning tell you, your views, your opinion, your condition, your belief system and other things. If you allow that to interfere with what you experience through your sense experience, whether seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile or thought consciousness, these are the things that will condition you to react and stir your mind, leading to all the mental hindrance. But when you see things as they are, without the words, without the conditioning, without your mundane mind telling you all these things, then you see truth, you see the reality. Then from there you can awaken, you can understand. Then the teaching will fall into place. Then you will develop penetrative understanding of the essential dhamma. And this is how meditation can bring forth the transformation in your mind state to liberate this mind so that it can awaken to the truth. So basically this is a brief summary. Then coming to meditation, we need to understand the five mental hindrances are the opposite five mental states that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state, that will prevent you from becoming peaceful, calm, aware within, or from having this meditative mind of inner peace, inner awareness, which is the silent mind, to develop this meditation to awaken. Yeah. So like the word mental hindrance, it will hinder you. So we have to understand clearly what these mental hindrances are. The first two are our sensual desire and ill will. When you live life, in the midst of life, as you experience things through your senses, every moment of consciousness, when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste or tactile feel or think of something, what happens is through our views and opinion and our conditioning, we react to sense experience. We tend to have this tendency of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant reaction to sense experience. And the moment you do that, mental hindrance arise. So both the duality of sensual desire and ill will, or pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, they are mental hindrance. If throughout the day you are actively arising them, it will condition you into heedless living. Heedless means you are not mindful at all. You are not aware of what is going on. You become heedless. You think a lot. You react to sense experience, creating hindrance that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's how your mind becomes restless, which is the fourth mental hindrance. Then, coupled with that, if you break your precept, you will have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. All this lead to mental hindrance. That's how your mind becomes more restless. That's the reason why you cannot be peaceful and you cannot meditate. That's the reason why in the teaching, they come out with methods and techniques. Because they don't know how to control this mind. They don't know how to deal with this mind that think a lot with all the mental hindrance. Then the other mental hindrance is sleepiness of mind, sloth and torpor, lethargic mind. When you don't see the importance of this teaching, when you don't understand the importance of this teaching, you will not be interested. Then you become like very confused with a lot of doubt, which is another mental hindrance. Then, like when we attend any lecture or any lessons, if it's a topic that we are not interested in or we don't have the understanding, we will feel very sleepy when we attend. So likewise, the Dhamma is the same. If you don't have the understanding, you don't see the importance of it. This sloth and torpor, which is sleepiness or dull mind, lethargic mind, they will become a hindrance to your ability to stay awake or able to be aware to develop the meditation. So these are the mental hindrances, five of them, and they arise in living beings' mind throughout the day if you are not mindful or heedful. And with this mental hindrance, you come here and meditate, you will have problems. Because it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. So as they arise so frequently in the midst of life, you live a life of disorder. There is no more order in your mind state. And because of this disorder, you will have chaotic effect on your mental states. So this mental hindrance will hinder your mind from becoming peaceful, mindful and aware within. So what you need to do is, you have to understand you cannot suppress this mental hindrance, or you cannot try to do away with it, push it away. Any of this action will lead to more problems. Because according to the Buddha, it's not the mental hindrance. The mental hindrance are there because your spiritual faculties are not there. It's not developed. So the key to meditation is to develop the spiritual faculty. And this teaching has been lost or forgotten. That's why now they come out with method and technique to prevent the mind from thinking or heedlessly wandering off. So they have a meditation object to fix the mind, to control the mind. It can be breathing, or it can be rising, falling of the abdomen, or any mantra, any chanting or what. But if you understand that these are all skillful means to train the mind, to develop the spiritual faculty or siddhi, to allow your mind to enter the meditative state of inner peace, inner awareness, and inner peacefulness, then no more problem. Then you can use it as a skillful means to train your mind. That's why all the method and technique, they are not the meditation. They are just skillful means to train the mind, to anchor the mind, to develop the spiritual faculty. And what I normally teach is the mind sweeping method. Then after you have this mind sweeping method combined with metta, it can help you to decondition the heedless thinking, temporarily keep the five mental hindrances at bay. Then you will experience some form of quietness of mind. Then during that time, you can use your breathing, anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath, like what our sister has done. So mindfulness of the in and out breath is not concentration, not focusing, not absorption. It's just be mindful of the in and out breath. Just aware, silent. Just feel the breathing. The moment the mind is aware of the in breath, like the Buddha said, breathing in, the mind is aware, means mind and the breath move as one without thought. And that is mindfulness. So breathing out is the same. Breathing out, then where? Breathing in, then where? Initially, this mind will wander off if it's not trained. Every time it wanders off, just be patient, bring it back, and develop this anapanasati to stabilize the mindfulness. When mindfulness stabilizes, it will become samadhi. Then you can meditate. That's how all these methods and techniques are meant to develop the training of the mind to be aware, mainly to be aware. Then stabilize it to become samadhi. Okay, with this, I will give you a simple instruction on how to meditate. You can off the light. And those who already know how to meditate, you can straight away proceed. For those who are still new or who already know how to meditate, you can use whatever skillful means that you have developed to train your mind to be aware, relaxed, silent. Then stabilize it until it becomes samadhi, collected and unwavering. The silent mind is the true mind, is the meditative mind, and that is the mind that can understand many things. The mind can never be silent until all of your thinking stop. And the thinking can never stop if your mental hindrances are there. So it's like a chicken and egg story. If your spiritual faculties are not there, the mental hindrance will be there. So to stop thinking, you have to develop mindfulness. That's it. The moment you are aware, there is no thought. And when there is no thought, you will start to settle down. You will start to develop the peacefulness of mind, the calmness of mind, leading to inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness. When the mind settles down with sati or mindfulness, you will not think, you will just be aware. Then you will experience a type of calmness. They call it piti, spiritual calmness, or spiritual rapture, or spiritual joy. When it arrives, you just relax deep into it and allow it to become more and more peaceful, more and more quiet. Then this piti can also transform and become more subtle. Then you will experience another mind state which they call sukhang or sukha. Sukhang is blissfulness of mind. The mind becomes very blissful, very peaceful, very calm, and full of bliss within. And sukhang or blissfulness is not an enlightenment factor. That's why you are not careful. You get attached to it. It can become a craving. But initially it's okay, you can experience it, then you continue to relax into it until this blissfulness becomes like no more. It will come to pass. Then you will experience another type of quietness, stillness, tranquility of mind. And this tranquility of mind or stillness of mind will make your breathing, object of meditation, very, very subtle, like no more breathing. When you reach that state, it's very important that you don't do anything. Just completely relax and silent into it. And allow that silent mind to settle down, to become more and more quiet, more and more peaceful, more and more tranquil, and more still, until there is no more thought, no more movement. When that happens, your mind will enter what they call sati. When your mind is in sati, it is mindful on its own. It don't need an object of meditation. By then, technically, you can relinquish your object of meditation and you are aware, mindful, and still, peaceful on your own without having to rely on anything. That is the ultimate training of the mind. So with that, I will allow you to develop your own meditation. Then for those who are still new, you want to use the mind sweeping method, follow with metta, you can. But if you are completely new, you haven't heard of this, later on, I will pass you the two books, Understanding the Meditation as Taught by the Buddha, Part 1 and Part 2. These are the two books that can help you understand the mind sweeping method combined with metta, how it can help you decondition your heedless thinking, temporarily bring your 5 mental hindrance to a cessation or standstill, so that it can help decondition your heedless thinking mind to temporarily settle down, so that the 5 mental hindrance is not active. Okay, I will ring the bell after about 10 or 15 minutes. Then after that, if you still want to meditate, you can continue. Otherwise, you can slowly and mindfully come out of meditation. Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. The real meditation is to finally develop the spiritual faculty, especially sati, mindfulness. Or in the Mahayana tradition, they call it chennian. When your sati or mindfulness is very stable, there is the meditative mind. And you have to use that mind that has the spiritual faculty to develop the daily mindfulness meditation. Means to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. This meditative Noble Eightfold Path cultivation, it involves the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. And the Noble Eightfold Path is the Fourth Noble Truth. So the three turnings of the Fourth Noble Truth. The first Noble Truth is the Noble Truth of Dukkha. It's not the meditation. The second Noble Truth is the Noble Truth of cause of arising of suffering or accumulation in the Mahayana tradition. All of accumulation is attachment, clinging, craving, desire with the evil roots. That's why they are the cause of suffering. Whatever that you hold on to, cling on to, grasp on to. So craving is the cause of suffering. So it's the same, essentially the same. Again, this is not meditation. This is just a proclamation of truth. Suffering and the cause of is arising. Then the third Noble Truth is to explain to you clearly that there is a possibility of enlightenment in the here and the now. Suffering need not be. And Nibbana, which is the enlightened state of mind, can be realized in the here and the now. You don't have to wait till death. So again, this is very reassuring. That's why it will drive you to have the faith, the spiritual zeal, sincerity to cultivate this way. Then the fourth Noble Truth, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. The Buddha said, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. This is the meditation. The purpose of meditation is to realize this wisdom, this enlightenment, so that it can bring about the understanding of life, to be free from all suffering in life. So this Noble Eightfold Path is to be cultivated. So the first turning is the proclamation of what this Noble Eightfold Path is all about. Then you listen to it, you read through it, you develop the first level of first turning wisdom called Suttamaya Panya, wisdom born of listening to the teaching, the proclamation of truth by the Buddha. Then the second turning is this Noble Truth, which is the fourth Noble Truth that talks about the Noble Eightfold Path, is to be cultivated. And that is the second turning. So you need to reflect and contemplate into it. Why did the Buddha say this? Why is it so different from the first turning leading to the second turning of the first, second, and third Noble Truth? First turning, this Noble Truth of suffering is to be understood. No need to cultivate. But the fourth Noble Truth you need to cultivate, because knowledge is not enough to free or liberate your mind. You need to develop the awakening. That's why it's to be cultivated. Awaken to. Then you have to reflect and inquire deep into it. How can I develop this contemplative wisdom? This inquiry. So when you reflect, contemplate, and inquire into what the Buddha has said, then you will develop another level of wisdom, which he called Chittamaya Panya. Wisdom born of constant reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into the Noble Truth that the Buddha has proclaimed. Then the third thing is to put what you have developed or understood into practice. The third thing is about bhavana, mayapanya, wisdom born out of meditative training. That's why it's all about meditation. And the third thing, the Buddha always express it in a very unusual manner. It all points toward enlightenment. In the third turning of the fourth noble truth, the Buddha said, this noble eightfold path has already been cultivated. Means you have perfected it, you have awakened to it. Noble eightfold path has become a part of your nature. You have the embodiment of the noble eightfold path perfected in you. Means you have right view, right speech, right action, right thought, right effort, right livelihood, right mindfulness, and right samadhi in you, all the noble evil perfector, perfectly cultivated. That's how enlightenment can happen. The enlightened one in the time of the Buddhas are called noble ones. Noble ones who has the noble qualities of life. Means they have right understanding of life, right view with regards to the nature's law that governs life and existence. Then from there, they will have this noble factor of right thought, right speech, right action, right communication, the right way of living life through right living or right livelihood. Then they are constantly, diligently cultivating the four right effort to purify their mind states. Then after that, develop wisdom through mindfulness and samadhi. That's how you can awaken. So this is briefly what you have to do after you have developed the training of the mind to be aware, to be mindful, to have this spiritual faculty, to make your mind have the quality of attentiveness to understand the Dhamma and to meditate, to awaken, to transform, to develop the wisdom. Okay, now we turn to page 6. We will do the invocation to the devas. I will read to you the English translation. Page 6. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching.
Samanta Chakvalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Sadhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakkamokkadang Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Ittipiso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bijacarana Sampa panno sugato lokavido anotaro purisa dhammasati satta deva manusana buddho bhagavati Svakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehi paseko opanaiko pachatam veditabho vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho Ujjupatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho Yapatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho Michi patipanno bhagavato sakkasangho Yadidam chattari purisa yukkane Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato sakkasangho Ahuneyo, Pahuneyo, Dakineyo, Anjali Karaniyo, Anutarang Punyaketang Lokasati. Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect Triple Gem. So that you can develop the faith and at the same time the marital section, the mindfulness and the rest of the spiritual faculty. Buddhang Pujjami. Dhammang Pujjami. Sanghang Pujjami. Okay. You can sit. Then we can prepare for second session. Okay. Before we move on to the second session, I just want to let all Kayamitas, the new and the old, we already have a website where all our recorded talk, audio file, video file, even the transcript books, everything. They are both in soft and hard copy. They are all there. Yeah. So you can access it by logging on to this website. Just type in Brother Teo at just.com no at it's not an email brotherteo.com I think you go to Google so this is our official website so sometimes you go to other search engine you may not get it because it's still quite new. We just launched it less than 2 months, 1st of March, I think. Then you can try this one. Brother Teo, Kayamitas. You type this one in, I think it will come out. Brother Teo, Kayamitas. So you type this one in. It can also come out. But it's better to type in this brotherteo.com, because it's our website domain name. Inside the website, there are a lot of things. On the home page, you will have all the weekly talk, Tuesday, Thursday, and our Sunday talk. Then, like this month, we have the house dana. I think it's not uploaded yet. It's still with, I don't know, Sui An or Chin Hong. We will upload it there. Then, we also have our client talk. So, that one, we will also upload there. Then, whatever activity or spiritual trip or annual retreat, we will also update them there. And this homepage is very good because it is all categorized by the monthly activity. Immediately the page that come out, you will have all the latest activity for the month of April. Then you scroll down to the bottom, you can go and click on March. The whole of March, all the talks will be there, all the activity and sharing will be there. Then you can go to February, January, then even December 2016 and all those things. I think the talk before we launch the website, they are all in the repository section. You have to go to the repository section. We only have March and April, I think. Then, whatever about this site, about us, you click on that one. That one is very good. That one explains to you clearly how this website come about and why we choose this Brotherteo's Kayamitas. Kayamita means Dhamma friends. Friends of Dhamma, who walk the path of Dhamma. And there are two types of Kayamitas. It's all described there. And this is the Buddha's early days concept. Because in one of the sutta, he told Ananda, it is Kayamita shape that you must have if you want to be enlightened. For Kayamita shape is 100% of the holy life. Because without Kayamita, Dhamma friends are good friends who has the Dhamma. Or Dhamma friends who walk the path of Dhamma. You will not have the condition to listen to the right Dhamma. And when you don't have the condition to listen to the right Dhamma, you will not come across this teaching. You will not have any possibility of awakening or enlightenment. And all these are stated in the Avijja Sutta, the Sutta on Ignorance. How the Kayamita ship develops the condition for awakening. And without this Kayamita ship, it will lead to downfall and all those things. So that's the reason why, since the inception day in the year 2004, when I decide to come out and manager decide to come out and give the sharing, he already had this Kayamita ship in mind. That's why ours is not a registered society. It's an informal grouping of Dhamma friends who share the same vision and interest to learn the Dhamma, to walk the path of Dhamma, to develop the understanding of this beautiful teaching as taught by the Buddha, the essence of his teaching, which is the Four Noble Truths. And when you have the Dhamma, you can be a blessing to all. And that's how the world consciousness can improve. And it can bring about great benefits to living beings, the society as a whole. Yeah. So all these are clearly explained in the website. And all the transcript books, the Dhamma sharing, the Bodhisattva way, the talk, the transcript, everything, they are all, as we move along, we will update them, then we will try to get them developed following the other earlier transcript, the format will be slowly standardized. Then we will improve on it to suit the situation so that there is easy access. And for all this hard work, we should thank the community and all those who have helped out in developing this website and setting out all the beautiful layout together with the what you call that. They make the website like so easy to locate the talk. They got a sequence of I don't know what you call that. They document it in according to dates and classes. So you want to listen to Tuesday class, you go to that category on Tuesday class. So it will lead you back to the year 2006, I think. Then some of the talk before that, 204, 205, I think it's all in the tape form. They call it cassette tape. Now I think cannot play already. But luckily they have helped to do up a few transcripts which we are actually incorporating in. I need some time to do all this. We have put in a few, but there are still a few outstanding. Anyway, hopefully, as we have more and more of this condition, we will put them in place. Then now it's easy. You don't have to every time go back to your handphone to locate for the talk. Whatever talk you want, the audio file, they are very clear, and we should thank Sui An for recommending that very good recorder. Yes, the talk is very clear. Hardly any distortion from the background. This recorder, I think, is very special. I don't know why all the other sound didn't go in, only from the mic. And it's very clear. But the recorder is not cheap, I think. Last time also 200 plus. Well, now 400 something. That's why we have to really thank Suyan for locating this one. And this one is very clear, very clear. I've listened to many of the recorded talk, and the quality is very good. So we should rejoice. Then also all those who help out, especially Brother Teo, Brother Jin Hao, Sister Pamasuri, and BDL, and many others who are Brother Lau, KL Lau. He is the main guy. He really, after he come in, the whole thing like become very simple. We only have to give our input. He is very good. He's very good. And he solved a lot of problems. So now we are trying to learn how to maintain the website and how to put in things. The setting out itself is already a big task if you don't have the right people and the right understanding. That's why it's like Dhamma. You don't meet somebody who really understands. You can go round and round and round. Then don't know when can you really hit the right target. So website is the same. You don't have an experienced guy to guide us and to advise us. I tell you, it's going to take a long time. Then later on, when I really reflect back, we did it up so fast, though. When Ingvi told me, at first I thought cannot be. I think less than 1 month, we get the website out. It was so amazing. February the 4th, we had a first official meeting. End of March, we launched. Beginning of March, first of March, we launched the website. That's why it was so amazing, because we were lucky. Brother Teo and Pamasuri, they have all the, and Sui An, they all have all the audio file, video file, and all our, what they call, activities record, because all the spiritual trip photos and all those things. It was because of our annual gathering of Kayanamita, the annual gathering of Kayanamita that demands the video file. That's why they have them all. And actually, Brad Teo and Sister Pamasuri put in a lot of good effort to come out with all those. So we got all the records. Then with all the complete video file, I think Chin Hao went through it. Sui An was the one that recorded most of it. Then Tuesday class is Hui Rong. Then we also have Sunday class, Sister Lee, Siu Keng. So all this has come together to play their role. Then finally, Kayamita, through their Kayamita funds, get to sponsor this website. So it will have a lot of wholesomeness because every month we are paying subscription using Kayamita fund to maintain this website. We have a hosting site. Then we also have a domain. It's not expensive. We got more than enough funds to do all this. Then all the transcript too, because of Kayamita's, all this become possible. They help out in many ways. The transcript, the draft transcript leading to my editing. Then after that, our proofreading and all this thing. Then typesetting, then getting it printed. So all this, the costs are borne by Kayamita funds. Because only Kayamita fund can do all this wholesomeness. So this is just something I want to announce, make public, so that those who listen to today's talk, they can get to know the website. I repeat, the website is brotherteo.com. Brother Teo got no spacing, no dot also. Just brotheoh.com. You just Google, it will come out. Then you can go to the website to see everything. It's very complete. Even our annual gathering video, all the talk. The audio files are a lot. Then the transcript books too, especially the Heart Sutta, you should go through. So those who need all this Dhamma material, you can get them from there. And a lot of the audio files, you can listen to it attentively. With the faith, the understanding will come, it will unfold, and it can awaken living beings. They are very beautiful dhammas, and they are very potent in their ability to awaken living beings. So if you have the faith, the sincerity, the perseverance, and the understanding, you should listen to it. Then when you have the understanding, when you can benefit from it, you will progress very fast in the path of Dhamma. Then, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then your understanding will pave the way for your spiritual faculty to unfold. Then when you have the understanding, your daily mindfulness will unfold. The moment your daily mindfulness unfolds, you will progress very, very fast. Then you don't really need anything else. You just listen to the audio file, read the transcript book. A few of the transcript books, they are very, very important. Some of the earlier one, maybe the English is a bit colloquial, so you have to bear with us. That's why the suggestion is always to listen to the recording. Yeah, when you listen, this listening is different. You will understand it very much more clearly because the emphasis is very peculiar. The way I speak, the way I express it. If you are familiar with our expression, then it will go in deep. But if you are not familiar, you read just the transcript and don't listen to the audio file, you will find it very funny. Because sometimes we use our colloquial English. Understand or not? Is it okay? Then sometimes got the dialect also inside there. Then some of the expression only we understand. People of other culture and other civilization or society, they may not understand that clearly. So anyway, it is something that is very beneficial. for the world, for those who have the affinity and the condition to receive them. It will help them in a very major way. Okay, now we will come back to our second session. Second session is reporting of meditation. You can just put up your hand if you got any meditation experience to report. Then you can ask any question regarding your meditation or the teaching and how to apply all this that we have learned here to help you understand life and overcome whatever life situation or problem that you encounter. Okay, now we open it up. Anybody who wants to ask any question or share the meditation or report their meditation, you just raise your hand. Yeah? While I have a drink. Anybody? What about those who are new? Can you all follow? Okay. okay, it's a very standard question.
processing.
Oh, good, good. Whatever you are not sure, you are most welcome to ask, no problem. Then, if you report your meditation, we can use that condition to share the Dhamma. You only have to report exactly how you meditate and how you experience it, that's it. Don't have to add anything. Based on your own understanding, you just describe it. Then I will know what to tell you.
Okay. Hello. Good evening, brother and sister. My name is Stephanie. I don't come very often. Only when I have the conditions and the affinity.
good.
That so anyhow, I think maybe because I was seeking, so that brought me here. When I was in meditation just now, obviously I felt very peaceful.
Oh, good. Sadhu.
And there were aches and pains and heat at places where I felt I was facing some issues. mostly in my neck, my throat, chakras. And I think that is the area that I'm facing challenges with recently. And I just like to find how, because maybe I felt that I'm stuck in a short cycle. this is at home where I deal with my kids, my husband. And so I feel that sometimes I hit a stumbling block when it comes to... because we all have habitual tendencies.
Habitual tendencies.
And these habitual tendencies, if we do not break through them, though we make vows that we want to break through, and we want to break all the bad habitual tendencies, but sometimes you find that before you can... you find that you kind of repeating it over and over again while you May the consciousness hit you after that. So probably I'm seeking how to use mindfulness to break away from these tendencies that is actually causing is actually a vicious cycle.
Yes, causing a lot of negativity.
And of course, propagating a negative energies.
Yes.
So that is probably why it brought me here.
Thank you so much. Let us rejoice with a good question and sharing. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Because Stephanie is one of the typical one, but in her case it's more unique because she has been seeking. That word is very important. A living being that seek has a path, otherwise it won't seek. That seeking comes from your inner nature, the inner call to understand all this, and it has its condition. That's why it can unfold. And when the time comes, you will move. Then when you hit the right chord, you will progress. Then you will be able to break all this, like you mentioned, despite taking all the vows, determination to avoid evil, the good, purify the mind, follow the advice of the Buddha, and to become beautiful. But initially, it's not easy because of our society's situation, the condition that evolved since the Buddha's time until now. Nowadays, Buddhism has become so different from what it used to be. That's why during the early years, I remember when I was first searching too. But my nature was more lucky in the sense, the word lucky in inverted comma. In the sense that this nature has this very good past life cultivation, the condition, everything. That's why when it comes, it has all the condition, then it just hit the right chord, right place, right time, and all the teacher come, the guide come, the book come, everything that this nature need, they come. Then it just, over a period of 3 years, everything has been understood. Then a lot of other condition happen because of this nature's vow and all those things, the affinity with this nature, all those beings, they came. That's how this my Kayamita, Brother Teo Kayamita, or the Kayamita ship organization comes about. So all this lead my nature to question the teaching. Not the Buddha's teaching. What has been taught within the Buddhist community recently? It all started in the year 1971 when this nature was searching. Then as it searched, it has its own condition. But at that time, my nature knew I only need truth. Some aspect of truth of who am I? What am I? What is the mind all about? Nobody can tell me. And what is the essence of the Buddha's teaching? Until later, after this nature developed the clear understanding, then only it can develop this understanding to put them all together. That's why my nature has this ability to link all the teaching, the essential Dhamma of the Buddha, to become one teaching. But what I realized was, what has been taught is like various segregated segments. Here they teach one thing, then there they teach one thing. And most of the teaching are very theoretical, not useful to live life, not practical for living being to apply to real life situation. Those who have searched before, they will know, like just now Stephanie mentioned. He realized a lot of this has become habitual tendency. Habitual tendency means what? Your habit. It just come out like that. Because it has become so ingrained in you. The conditioning is so strong. That's why it's a habit. Habitual tendency. When your children, or your husband, or your spouse, or your good friend, colleague, or parent, or brother, when they say something because of your conditioning, you straight away react and respond. And it's like automatic. You cannot stop. Then you realize, this is completely against the Noble Eightfold Path. This is wrong speech. This is wrong approach to life. This creates negativity, conflict, misunderstanding. That's why a lot of quarrel, a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of tit and tat. They call strifle. Is it called strifle? Yeah, strifle. not the serious one. Like you think so, in Cantonese. So whenever you do that, you realize it's the ego that conditions you to do that. Because this ego is so strong, you don't want to be said you are wrong, you are stupid, you are foolish, you everything also don't understand. So this ego wants to fight back, wants to retaliate, and through memory, it thinks of the negative thing to hit back, understand? Then every time, especially between the children, your own children and your spouse, after they say something to you, you will tell back the kid or your spouse. You also like that way. You think you very good. Then your kid will tell you, Mom, you also like that one. I tell you, when your kid say it to you, you really cannot take it. Then you say, boy, you do it again, I'm not going to let you off. I'm going to ground you. But these are the usual standard, habitual way that living being attend to life. Because it is your habitual tendency, your anger, your hatred, your unhappiness. And these are all evil roots. That's why the Buddha's teaching is very beautiful. It wants you to develop awareness, mindfulness, to see all this. If you cannot see yourself clearly, you cannot understand yourself. And when you cannot understand yourself, you cannot understand others. Then there is no harmony. There is no way of real relationship. Then the relationship is based on an image of what that person is. And the image comes from your views and opinion of him or her or the kid or your friend or your in-law or whatever. And this negative perception of what they are is the one that condition your negativity or action, speech and thought, the evil roots. That's why they are the roots of all evil. They make you evil. They make you react, respond. That's how the mental hindrance come. These five mental hindrance, the first two are very powerful. Sensual desire, you will, throughout the day, you are not careful. You are arising them without you being aware. Every moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, recollect or recall something, or even smell, taste, tactile, feel something, what happened? We always have our preferences, right? Like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. Then sometimes we see somebody whom we don't like, who has given you a problem before, where you have very negative perception of that person, or it may trigger off what they call scars of memory, or phobia and all those things, because last time they have done certain things that make you so miserable and so unhappy. Then the moment you see them, this memory recall, that's why thought is response to memory. Then this thought, which is wrong thought, it will condition your fear, your anxiety, your phobia, your scars of memory. Then all this wrong thought will condition your negative emotion, your unhappiness, your fear, your phobia, your unhappiness, leading to sorrow, lamentation. Then sometimes you become very anxious, anxiety. So all these are what the Buddha called evil roots, roots of all evil, make you evil. And these are wrong thought that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your phobia, your selfishness, your desire, your craving, your misery. Then all these wrong thoughts, they are the cause of your suffering, because these are from your memory, your conditioning, your wrong views, your wrong thought. Then when you are not mindful, it will condition you to react, to stir your mind. Then your wrong speech, wrong action all come out. That's why the whole Noble Eightfold Path you violate. You have wrong view. You cannot accept them for what they are. So what happens is, instead of cultivating Noble Eightfold Path, you go and bang your head against the wall and violate all the Noble Eightfold Path factor. So to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path demands a lot of understanding. That's why the teaching come in three phases, three stages. Where's the jhana? The jhana. This one, yeah. This one is in the Heart Sutta. This chant is in the Heart Sutta. This one is in one of the appendix in the Heart Sutta. The three phases of Dhamma, the last page. Three phases of Dhamma. Means Dhamma can be cultivated in three phases. Phase one, the Buddha called it Pariyatti. Pariyatti is the learning of the teaching. How do you learn the teaching? Yeah? You remember earlier on, I was searching that time, seeking. Then I realized I can hardly find any person or any of the textbook that can explain to me the very basic, clear understanding of what this form and mind is all about. Means, who am I? What am I? And what this mind is all about. I only need certain truth about this thing. But I can't find. I only find the theory. And the theory is of not much use. But luckily, because of my past cultivation and inheritance, somehow I was able to manage and come to that clear understanding on my own. Yeah. Of course, I met my teachers too, yeah, my guide. But they didn't really teach me. They just share with me certain truth, and I don't need much from them. I only need truth. Then this nature will awaken. So these three phases of Dhamma, they are not taught. They are not properly taught. That's why people find it very difficult to penetrate the teaching. If you don't understand the teaching, how can you put it into practice? Phase two is Patipatti, which means after you have understood phase one, the teaching, the learning of the teaching, then you put it into practice. So the simple question is, how can you practice something that you don't understand? Correct not? So phase one is very important, isn't it? The learning of the teaching. How do we learn this teaching? So in the appendix, it's written very clearly. Phase one, Pariyatti, involves the learning of the teaching via the first turning and the second turning of the Four Noble Truths, leading to the first two types of wisdom. First turning, Sutta-maya-panya. Sutta is the discourse of the Buddha. Can be developed via the following. First is hearing. Hearing of the teaching or the Dhamma as shared by someone who understands the teaching. That's why the audio file will be very useful. Or any Dhamma talk that you can come across. Yeah. Then the next one is, because of technology nowadays, you don't have to be there. You can listen to the appropriate Dhamma recording like MP3, CD, video, etc. And the third way is to read about this teaching. Read those Dhamma books or materials, notes and materials, online, or as shared by somebody who understands the teaching. So if you go online, the transcript book and all things, you read, you have your understanding. The moment you read, if it's the truth, it will stand up to investigation, and you will understand them very fast. So this is how phase one can be developed, the first turning. Then after you hear them, listen to them, or read about them, you may not have the clear understanding yet because not everybody has a very good past. Some of you may not have the special condition from your past to immediately understand. First turning type of wisdom, you need to have very special past to understand and to awaken straight away. That's why it's called Sutta-maya Panya. Panya is wisdom. Wisdom born of hearing the sutta. So nowadays, apart from hearing, you can also read about it or listen to the recording. So we are, in fact, a lot more fortunate. So let's say, the Buddha said, after listening, you cannot awaken. And then there is a second turning that help you to understand this teaching. He said you should reflect on it, contemplate into it, and inquire into all this teaching or proclamation of truth that he has given you. And this is called a second turning, leading to a type of wisdom that the Buddha called Chintamaya Panya. Means wisdom born of contemplation, reflection, and inquiry into the truth that he has taught. So contemplation, reflection, and inquiry into the Dhamma is taught by the Buddha to develop further understanding. We are stabilizing what one has heard and read, then assimilating them into one's heart to set the base for developing further understanding later on via either the first, second, or third turning wisdom. So this part, you should spend more time on it. Phase one. To understand clearly the Buddha's teaching. Just like what I explained just now, meditation. You only need to understand that the five mental hindrances, they are your habitual tendency. Because if every day when you live your life, every moment of sense experience, whether you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel or think, you just react. Like, dislike, pleasant, unpleasant, and create sensual desire and ill will. What will happen? If you do it so habitually, so often, it becomes your tendency. That's why automatically you respond, you react. That's how all this creates more and more karmic negativity. All the wrong thoughts leading to wrong action, wrong speech, and wrong way of living life. So you are not cultivating Noble Epopa. Noble Epopa need to be cultivated with understanding. So the first turning and second turning wisdom can let you develop this phase one understanding. Then when you understand, you put into practice, it becomes very easy. Phase two is patipatti, putting the teaching into practice or cultivation. It involves the cultivation of the doctrine or the teaching in daily life. We are putting the teaching into practice to develop the third turning wisdom, bhavana maya panya. Bhavana is the meditative training needed to develop wisdom via the formal daily mindfulness and the four foundation of mindfulness meditation. Having a good religious routine to develop the five spiritual faculties will definitely help. Then you need to cultivate until one is awakened to move on to the third phase of Dhamma. At the third phase of Dhamma, you become very beautiful. Well, after you put it into practice, the second phase, if you finish that cultivation and awaken, then you become enlightened. And then the third phase of Dhamma is the most beautiful, Pativeda. This phase is reaping the fruit of one's hard work or cultivation, leading to a noble life. You get to live the life of an enlightened being, awakened one. So this one has got many benefits. This is the most beautiful phase of one's life, where one can truly live life to the fullest, to experience all of the noble life as described below. Life will become much more meaningful and good, because no more suffering. Then you will be able to understand life clearly. Hence, there will be a lot of joy, happiness, peace, love, and compassion within your mind. Then via heedful living, one is able to experience all of the wonders and beauty of life while in this world. Means you know the big difference between heedful living and heedless living. Heedless living lead to suffering, misery, a lot of karmic negativity. Whereas heedful living will make you very mindful, very aware of your mental intention, your mind state, so that wherever there is any unwholesome thought, action, or speech, you will arise the right effort to abandon it. That's how you cultivate. And the Klang talk last Friday was about this four right effort, which is very good. You should listen to it. And it will teach you how to overcome your habitual tendency. First, you have to be aware that this anger, this delusion, this greed, this lust, this fear, they are not you. They are conditioned arising mental state born of your delusion or ignorance. That's why they arise. So if you don't have wrong view, which is the Noble Eightfold Path Factor's first path factor, then you will not become heedless. You will become heedful. And you will not make all those mistakes. And you will not violate all the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why heedfulness is the path to the deathless, the Buddha said. The heedful never die. Whereas the heedless are as if dead. Means, although you are still conscious of life, but you are spiritually dead. You don't stand a chance as far as spiritual awakening or enlightenment is concerned. Then after that, you will be able to always act righteously with wisdom, love and compassion. Then you will always be heedful to live the noble life of great peace, great joy, great happiness. Hence, no more heedlessness. Then you will be able to live life in accordance with one's noble understanding, hence no more no need to worry about life anymore. Then you are always mindful of one's action, speech and thought process. We are living the life of heedfulness, because you are incapable of heedlessness anymore. The mental hindrance no more, the mental faculty took over. Then you will understand precisely that this form and mind is not oneself, but only a karmically conditioned vehicle and tool for one to use to live out this segment of your life while you are in this world. So all these are the great benefits. Then you have the first turning wisdom, second turning wisdom, third turning wisdom, all listed in the chart. So with this chart, you can develop the clear understanding of these three phases of Dhamma, and it's very easy. So right view is most important. That's why it's the first path factor in the Noble Eightfold Path. And the three right views are the three spiritual, are based on the three spiritual laws that governs all of life and existence in this universe of ours within the conditioned world. And what are these three spiritual laws? The first one is law of karma. That's why it's called Karma Niyama. It's all in the Heart Sutta note. And the second right view is Citta Niyama. Means order of the mind, the spiritual law. And this order of the mind follows the teaching of the Buddha. He called it the dependent origination, Paticca Samuppada, or dwelling. That is the teaching that describes clearly to you how you function as a human being, how dependent on ignorance you create mental activity. That's why avijja paccaya sankhara. And sankhara paccaya vijnanam, and how the whole of the dependent origination link forms. Then how it finally, how it finally lead to the whole mess of suffering. So if you understand this right view, you will know how to deal with the mind that goes wrong, to arise the wrong thought, wrong action, and wrong speech because you don't have the right view. You don't understand how you function as a human being. And you don't understand what delusion is, what ignorance is. And all these are very clearly described in the teaching. And when you have the understanding, and when you are mindful of it, and you put it to investigation through your daily life cultivation, you come to realize that his teaching stand up to investigation, and you realize the Buddha's teaching is so beautiful. Take for example the first right view, law of karma. That's why it's called Karma Niyama. He said under his teaching in the five daily contemplation, he said you have to contemplate these five things every day. The first four relates to the first noble truth, reality. He said this body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die one day, for he has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. So this is for you to clearly understand that this physical body is not you, it's made up of element, no knowing, how can it be you? That's why it goes the way of nature. You will have to experience old age sickness and death. And this is a common reality, common to all of humanity, even the animals, the fishes, any living thing, even the plants, the trees. And in particular, as a human being, that's why this body will go the way of nature. It will grow old, get sick when conditions are not right. Then it will finally die when consciousness separates from the form. So that you do not develop the wrong view, the delusion to attach to this body, thinking that it's you. When you attach to this body, what happened? The Buddha said, you will worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. That's why you have a problem. But if you have the understanding and you reflect all this five daily contemplation daily, then you come to understand, this is not me. These are elements, no knowing how can it be me. When consciousness separate, it goes the way of nature. That's why they can do autopsy. The doctor can cut you up and do everything. And you got no more feeling, no more consciousness. Then, that time, how can you say it's you? This is definitely not you. Then you think the consciousness is you, the mind, that separate is you. You go and meditate, then you will come to understand that there are two minds inside there. The first mind, which is that conditioned arising mind, thinking mind, or the material mind, is not you either. That one is conditioned arising, dependent originating. That one will cease. That's why that one, when it ceases, you didn't die, because you have a nature inside, the true nature, the eternal nature. You have to meditate and silence that mundane mind so that you can come into contact with the true mind. Then you can awaken. Then you realize both the physical body and the mind is not you. That's why in the teaching, the Buddha said the five aggregate of form and mind is not you. And the final summary of the first noble truth is that in short, it is due to your self-delusion. You deludedly attach, cling, and grasp onto this fiery or form and mind of the human being that is the cause of suffering. That's why he said this fire angry or grasping is suffering. When you deludedly, through self-delusion, think that it's you, you grasp and you hold and you cling, you will suffer. You think feeling is you, you will have problem. If you think everything that you come to perceive, including your loved one, your prized possession, your car, your property, your whatever that you hold on to dearly is you, you will have suffering. That's why the Buddha said, all of consciousness and its content, the other four aggregate, which is your feeling, your perception, your mental activity or thinking or conditioning, means your views, your opinion. If you attach and cling onto your views and opinion tenaciously, you will suffer. You will argue with people. You will become miserable. Then you cling onto your identity, you will also be afflicted and become miserable. Then consciousness is the last aggregate. If you attach and cling on to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think, you will also become miserable. Where you think all this condition arising entity, which is your consciousness, you think they are real. You think you can own them, possess them. But the Buddha said even this very physical body and mind of yours, you can't even own this. For this one goes the way of nature. When condition cease to be, this form and mind, the identity will cease to be. When the breath stops, all this collapse. Consciousness separate. Then the whole identity that you call yourself cease to be. Then who are you? What are you? Who die? What die? Now all this you will understand when you develop the mindfulness to meditate into all this and to understand clearly. But you can see them dependent, originating, coming and going. That's why your thought process, feeling, they come and they go. Perception, they come and they go. Mental activity, your thought process, they come and they go. They arise and they pass away. Consciousness, they arise and they pass away. If they are you, if they pass away, you should die with it, isn't it? How come you didn't die? Then who are you? What are you? If they are not you, how come they keep on arising in you? This is what the teaching is all about. You have to have mindfulness to see them clearly, then to see clearly that they are, in fact, not a reality. They exhibit the universal characteristics of impermanence. If you attach and cling, wanting things your way, which is not nature's way, not following nature's law with the right view, suffering will arise. When you cannot get what you want, suffering will be the result. So these are all very clearly given in the teaching. Then he said, because it is impermanent, it can never be a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling on to, hold on to, and say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, this entity can own everything. This can be mine. No such thing. So this understanding will unfold. This awakening will unfold when the spiritual faculties are there, especially your mindfulness. When you silence your mind, then when it has this ability to realize that true mind, it will have that understanding. Then the fourth contemplation is the same. The Buddha said, all that is mine, luring, beautiful, which you hold on to, yeah? Your loved ones, your prized possession, they were separate from you. When conditions cease to be, they will cease to be. Even your own physical body and mind, they were separate from you. When your breath stopped, your identity erased. How can you own anything? When your identity is erased, means you don't exist. In fact, before that, you also don't exist. Feel that form and mind is not you. So all this you will understand. So these four contemplation will allow you to have the initial wisdom to overcome most of the first noble truth realities that the Buddha talked about. The Buddha said birth, old age, sickness and death is suffering. The first three contemplation will take care of this. Then separation from loved one and prized possession is suffering. When you are with people whom you don't like, it's suffering. When you cannot get what you want, again, it's suffering. When your expectations in life are not met, again, that is suffering. So all this, the Buddha say, in short, it is due to your self-delusion that condition you to grasp and cling to all this five real form of mind that I call suffering. That is the understanding, that is the teaching, and you have to clear. To be very clear about this. Otherwise, you cannot live life. You will be afflicted. Then the last contemplation is the most important. That is the one that I try to explain to you all. The Buddha said very clearly, you have to listen to this. This one has to do with the law of karma. He said, because there is this law of karma, we, not only you, we, all living beings, not only human beings, even the non-human, the animals, the fishes, reptiles, and all these things. We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. So this is a very powerful statement, a very powerful right view, basing on the law of karma. As a law of karma is, you reap what you sow. Do good because good. Do evil because evil. This is a nature's law. You cannot argue against this law. So this law of karma, the Buddha said, is responsible for your entire life. Because you are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it. And you are what you are because of it. And this is the moral causation. So what will happen if you don't take care of karma? You will surely have a lot of suffering and misery. That's why you need to take care of karma. Because karma plays such a great role in your life. So how do you take care of karma? That's how the Buddha's teaching come about. All Buddha teach the same. He said you avoid all evil, do good. You will take care of your karma. But if you don't avoid all evil, you create all the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, which are the evil roots of all evil that will make you evil. Then you will violate your precept. You will create a lot of karmic negativity. and you reap what you sow. Born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, you are what you are because of karma. So if this life you keep on scolding your children, getting angry with people, including your spouse, your husband, and all that, you reap what you sow. In future, what happens when you come? People will scold you back. Do all those things that you do to people. If you don't want to have that, you better develop the Noble Eightfold Path. Have right view to accept them for what they are. You can love them with all your love. You can do your duty as a mother, as a wife, as a spouse, as a normal human being. That you are nice to people, good to people, gentle, polite, kind, sincere, helpful, loving, compassionate. When you come, you reap what you sow. Because you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned, supported by your karma. You are what you are because then in future when you come, you will have good parents who will care for you, love for you, sacrifice for you, treat you nicely, gently, pleasant. You will have good spouse who will look after you, love you, sincere to you. Yeah. You will not encounter all those negativity. And you cannot blame the God or the or any of these things for what happened to your life. The Buddha said you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because so almost everything about your life is karmically driven. So who can you blame for your situation, life situation? You can only blame yourself through your own karmic negativity from your past life and this life. If you want to know how your future is, look at what you are doing now. If you continue with all this negativity, you are going to reap the fruit of whatever you create. So if you plant the seed of evil roots, negativity, anger, hatred, delusion, suffering, misery, or selfishness, envy, jealousy, this will be the result when you come in the future. Sometimes this life you get it back. Is that what you want? If that is not what you want, then you better change. Learn to avoid all evil, do good. Then how to avoid all evil? The Buddha said, keep the 5 precepts, minimum. These are the source of all evil. A person who breaks the precept is an evil person. Take for example the first precept. We chant, we renew our precept. Panatipata veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. What does it mean? We undertake the training rule. Training rule means develop mindfulness to train yourself to abstain from killing and causing harm to fellow living beings. You can be mindful of that, aware of that, and undertake that training rule. Then you really keep your precept. Otherwise, you are like a parrot. You chant, Panatipata veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. The next moment you go home, you whack the mosquito. You are not serious about the precept. You are not mindful of your mental intention, your own negativity. And who kill? Who harm? You ask yourself. Who kill? Who harm? Huh? A violent person, angry person, deluded person, selfish person. All the three evil roots are there. That's why they violate their precept. That's why precept is being given to you out of love and compassion by the Buddha. It's to protect you. It's not to be a burden to you. That's why you must have gratitude towards the Buddha for pointing out to you this beautiful teaching. If I can keep the precept and go beyond the precept to develop the ennoble, means not only I don't kill, I don't harm. I develop love and compassion to care for living beings. Okay. Now you will talk about that because you are a human being. When you become mosquito, how will you respond? How can this guy or this lady, get hun, do this to me? You know when you kill the mosquito, how much fear you put into that mosquito? Wait. Definition. That coming, you reap what you sow. You know in future what happens if you kill enough mosquito. you will end up in one of the accidents, like car is a bam, somebody hit you. You like kena shock like the mosquito like that. Understand? This is the karmic. It's the same. You don't kill. There are people who are professional. Understand? Or pest control company. Hire them. No. It is their livelihood. They choose to do it. Understand? Or? Well, it's being paid. You hire them. But you got no intention to kill. Then when I ask these pest control people come, I say, you don't kill. You can use other what? I don't want poison in my house. You can set your condition. But it doesn't mean you kill, understand? Or? When you hire these people to come, you don't have intention to kill. You just want to clear it. How they do it? Yeah, that's why you haven't experienced. No, you haven't experienced the effect. You know why? And I tell you a very simple example which I saw real life. It is a real life case. I used to rent a house in SS2 1985 that time. I haven't bought my house. I bought my house in 87. Then when I bought my house, I moved out. That was a junction house. You know what is a junction house? Oh, they say bad karma. You bad feng shui is bad karma. Because the feng shui also against you. But nothing to do with feng shui. People who don't understand think it's feng shui. You know what feng shui is all about, or not? Man and nature. No. Man and nature must harmonize, understand? Or? So feng shui people, they know how to look at feng shui, understand? Or? They know how to look at the qi flow, the yang qi, and the yin qi. Then the good qi, understand? Or? Which will bring about good, they call it good feng shui. Yeah. So what is junction? Junction is a, what is a junction? Intersection, but it's a flow path. Understand? Flow path of what? Energy. Good and bad. Tuo ho, tuo pai, all come. Understand? And most human beings, their karma is horrible. Bad one, a lot. Though, junction how? Because you receive a lot of this positive and negative. The bad one, you kena. Understand? But the good one, sao mei, cannot get. Where you don't have the good karmic inheritance from the past to receive. So that's why junction place, house, a lot of people get into big problem. But when I stay there, I got promoted. I become very peaceful. And I receive a lot of good things when I stay in those junction house for the 2 years. My wife also no problem. But my son got compound fracture. Then, the hand, he fell. Yes. Young boy, naughty. He climbed the staircase and the what do you call the chair. He don't know how to walk yet that time. There's a runner. You call it a runner or what? Walker. I think he tripped or don't know what. I also don't know. I was not at home. Then he fractured the hand. Then my brother, one or two that came and stayed with me, got minor motor accident. That's it. Then later on, after I shift hour, that couple that shifted in, you know what happened? He got a kam long yi, you know. He told me, the first day I saw him move it in, I said, this is beautiful, where do you get it? Oh, he said, this one I've been breeding it for very long. He said, people offer me 25,000 ringgit, I don't want to sell it. Then 2 days later, I go and collect my letter. I saw in the aquarium, no more kam long yi. Then I asked him what happened. He said, my wife, he said. He said, my wife. He go and use the mortin like you go and kill all the mosquito. Cockroach, I don't know. Then one of the cockroach jump inside the aquarium. Don't know, one or two. Then this, you know, the fish, like this type of thing. Zook. Because of the mortin and the thing, the kam long yi, the 25,000 also come. Then his son also compound fracture. And after that, about a month or so later, I used to go back and collect my letter, meals for the next 2 or 3 months. Then I keep on hearing bad things from him, all those problems. Then I hinted to him, do you notice this is a junction house or not? He said, yeah. I said, who chair one? I said, but when I stay, not really that chair. For me, my wife is okay. But for you, you don't have the ability to really withstand all this. I hinted to him, I said, you better think about relocating. Then later on, I think he relocated. So, junction house is not about feng shui. Feng shui play a very small role. You know what is feng shui? You choose the good location with the good qi. It's just like you got all the bank account saving, like your merits, your money in the bank account. You use it faster. The feng shui people know how to look for a place that have good qi. So you will have good energy that will create good condition for you to have good life. So it's like you spend your good merits. Understand? But then, the main thing that governs your life is karma. Understand? You don't take care of karma, what will happen? That's why all the guy who believe in feng shui, somehow or other, they go down. Then they blame feng shui again. They go and do all the unnecessary renovation. Then finally, they also get into big trouble. But those who have the understanding of the Dhamma don't need feng shui. I never believe in feng shui. I believe in taking care of your own life, your own mind, your own karma. Then karma will take care of you. You have to be mindful. No, this is a nature's law. That's not like the live wire. Not only cockroach, anything that have life, you don't eat, you don't kill. No, keep your house clean. You ask my wife, he will teach you. Even the ants, you have to keep it clean. Because they come, because there is something for them. Understand? Understand? That you want to prevent mosquito, put netting. Then take care of your environment. Don't have all those stagnant water and all those things. But more important is take care of karma. So when you understand all of the precepts that you keep is to prevent you from violating the karma. And those who break the karma, the precept, they are evil people. That's why you have to keep the precept, so that you can avoid all evil. Then do good is what? Cultivate right thought, right speech, right action, based on your right view. You reap what you sow. If you are kind to people, gentle, pleasant, sincere, kind, good, have this respect, gratitude, contentment, appreciative of what people have done for you, especially your loved ones, your spouse. If you appreciate what they have done for you, contribute towards the family unit, you will have a lot of joy and you will have this love towards them and say, thank you so much for what you have done. If your husband come back and tell you, honey, thank you so much for helping to look after the family. You have sacrificed so much. You deserve a holiday. I tell you, it will be the happiest gift. Not all the money and the flashy car. What for? It's just the word. The sincere.
That is a very ideal situation.
It's not ideal. It's not ideal. You call it human nature. That is not human nature. That is delusion. When people kind to you, only you kind to people. Not only you can still be kind, you can still have love. You know what happened or not? When you see all these people going that way, you pity them. You have love and compassion for them. You know why are they like that? They're out of ignorance, they do all this. Out of delusion, they go through all this suffering. If they had this teaching, nobody will choose to go that way, I tell you. If you have this teaching, do you still want to violate the precept? Because you have not seen the fruition of it. That's why you're still there to kill cockroach and mosquito. You go and try. Because as you develop this ability, you cannot, the slightest negativity, even at thought level, He showed it to me 21 years ago. The moment that thought arises, karmic conditioning come. And I know something is coming. And sometimes you can see them coming. And I can feel and understand how all this is coming. Only living beings who are not sensitive, who don't have the mindfulness, who don't have this ability to connect to that nature, cannot understand. Because they are completely heedless, lost in thought. They got no sensitivity. They got no ability to feel for the living being. To feel the nature's law. To feel life as it is. Because you got too much noise up here, thinking. Fear, worry, anxiety. That one, no more consciousness. That's why I didn't take medicine. I scored biology. I topped in the school. I got the best result for maths and science. Form 5, I got 7 book prizes. And my father wanted me to be a doctor because he's a Chinese sensei. But in order to be fair to him, I put in 4 medicine and 4 engineering, and I draw a lot. I took out all 4 also engineering. Then I told my father, I tried my best, sorry, destined to be an engineer. That's how I ended up becoming an engineer. And when I was in standard 2, somehow the nature inside knew that I wanted this profession. A lot of things later on you will come to know when you start to cultivate. Before you cultivate, you won't understand. You will think it's fairy tale, not important. But as you have this sensitivity, this understanding, all this will unfold and you will come to understand them. So all this understanding from the right view, like law of karma, the whole teaching will come about. Then you develop all the 4 right effort. You listen to the clang talk, you understand. Right effort to prevent the arising of the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood. The first one is when they arise really, wrong thought, wrong action, wrong speech, like you say, habitual tendency that make you emotional, negative, and create karmic negativity and downfall. So what happens is when you're aware that this is destroying you, bring about downfall, creating karmic negativity, creating disharmony, unhappiness, and all this negativity. You are not peaceful, not happy. You cannot develop the harmony and all this thing. So you are struggling because all these are karmic negativity. Wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, born of wrong view, reacting and doing all these things. So when you see all this and awaken to it and you decide to change overnight, to follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil by keeping the precept and never to violate this, then cultivate the right effort to arise the right thought, right speech, right action. Wow, the timer is very accurate. My wife gave me a warning, 10:30 must stop. So all this you must understand. Then the other 2 right effort is to cultivate the right thought, right speech, right action that are still not in you. Then the last right effort is to perfect them, refine upon them, and make them a part of your nature, so that you are incapable of negativity, so that you only have goodness. Then finally, you have to purify your mind, develop more mindfulness to awaken to the characteristics of nature, impermanence, suffering state, and non-self or empty nature. And through this, you will develop the wisdom to liberate your mind, then you will not suffer anymore. Otherwise, by avoiding evil and do good, you will bring about good life, good blessing, good karma, but you will still not complete your ability to be free of suffering. We have to be free of suffering demands much, much more than merits. It demands wisdom, understanding, spiritual understanding. Otherwise, you are still attached to this physical body, this mind. Then you worry about what happens after death. Then you worry about your inheritance, your loved one. This is attachment. This can still cause suffering despite your good karma, your good merits, blessing, and inheritance. That's why the whole teaching is so beautiful. So this is what you can come to realize and understand if you really have faith in the Buddha Dhamma and his teaching. Okay, with this, I will end my today's sharing. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. You want to understand more? Go and listen to the recording and the transcript book. Read up the book. The House Dhana at Understanding the Essential Dhamma is taught by the Buddha, the Brown Book. Yeah. House Dhana at Klang, Nancy's house, yeah. Brother Sia's house. Yeah. Okay, we'll do the that's the book, yeah, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Let us do the sharing of merits, with the devas. Akasata cha bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakantu loka sasana itta watta chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menyatina hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatina hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatina hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu Yāvā nivāna pātiyā sādhu, sādhu, sādhu. Keep in respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, then we end.
Happy birthday, happy birthday. If I have to call you to make sure that I come in.
Okay.